From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made 1 week ago when a more than $2 trillion economic relief bill was signed into law. The CARES Act is designed to stimulate the economy and provide direct support to individuals, businesses, organizations during the coronavirus pandemic. Businesses, especially small businesses, as well as nonprofits and organizations, find themselves particularly affected by the effects of this pandemic and physical distancing rules, of course, and they're wondering how to stay afloat during this time, remain strong after all of this ends. The CARES Act provides $350 billion in federally backed forgivable loans for small business relief to prevent layoffs and closures. We've heard from many small business owners in our community who say they don't yet understand how to navigate, how to do this, how to get the loans, or how to be eligible, who to call. The Rochester Area Community Foundation and CauseWave Community Partners have heard similar comments, and the teams there have created a webinar that will air live later today to help organizations understand the program and how they can benefit. And this hour, we preview the webinar, we bring in the experts. This is essentially 2 hours of open phones for you today. So if you've got questions, this is really aimed at organizations, small businesses this hour. Congressman Joe Morelli will join us at 1 o'clock for the 1 o'clock hour. And this hour, we want to open it up. If you've got questions on how to get help, do you know small business owners? Are you a small business owner? Are you part of an organization that's concerned? Do you feel like you should be eligible, but you don't know who to call? There's a lot to kind of sort through, and let me welcome our guests who are with us. Simeon Bannister is Vice President of Community Programs at the Rochester Area Community Foundation. Welcome, my friend. Sorry we can't see you in person, but how are you doing?
I do miss seeing you, man, but we're doing okay.
Todd Butler, President and CEO of CauseWave Community Partners. Welcome, Todd. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Evan. Happy to be with you.
Martin Birmingham is the CEO of Five Star Bank. Martin, welcome. How are you?
Good, Evan. Thank you for having me.
And Emily Cohen is an attorney with Harder, Seacrest & Emery. Emily, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Hi. Thanks, Evan.
So briefly, Simeon, what time is the webinar this afternoon? Give people some information there.
Yeah, so we have actually done this as an on-demand briefing for folks. We'll be getting it up on the website this afternoon. The URL is www.recf.org/cares-briefing. And it's going to be there as long as people need to access it. Again, we've done it as an on-demand webinar, so we pre-recorded it, and folks can easily access it and watch it. Now, let me tell you this, Evan. We've decided to split this into two pieces so folks can watch it, digest it. The provisions of the bill are becoming active today, actually, particularly for the payroll protection piece. So digest it over the weekend. And then we're going to come back on Tuesday with a question and answer session, as well as an update as we continue to learn more because the guidance from the SBA was released even late last night. And so folks can come back and get additional questions answered as we all continue to learn more.
All right. So that pre-recorded information is up there on demand starting this afternoon. It's racf.org. And then what's the tail end of that again, Simeon? racf.org/cares-briefing.
So CARES-briefing, BRIEFING.
All right. And so listeners, again, if you've got questions, they're going to try to have those answered through this briefing on the Rochester Area Community Foundation's website. Take a look this afternoon, share it with people, digest it over the weekend, and then if you still got questions or want answers, you can come back. They're going to be revisiting this subject. So just trying to get as many questions answered as possible. And let me also let our listeners know, we've got phones that we can open up, and you can also email the program. If you want to call the program with questions about this coronavirus relief bill, who's eligible, how to get it, it's 844-295-TALK, toll free. 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email questions, connections@WXXI.org. Simeon, I'll start with you on just sort of the general questions you're getting. What are you hearing most often in the community?
So we've had the good fortune to work with a lot of partners, in this case with Harder Seacrest and with Five Star, to really try to respond to some of the challenges. I think we all know that these are some of the most uncertain times that any of us ever anticipated living through. And frankly, it's threatening the operational stability of the nonprofit sector, of small business. And these are all areas that the Green Foundation has been engaged in. Folks want to know, how does this bill work? What are the nature of the supports? Who's eligible and who's not eligible? How do you apply? And we're learning all that information and getting that guidance. Folks will hear some about that this afternoon. But what I can tell you is that if you are an organization that employs fewer than 500 people, you are eligible for the payroll protection supports. There are other pieces of the bill, economic injury, disaster loans, amongst other things. And each of those provisions is designed to try to sustain our organizations. There was a lot of advocacy. I mean, you should know that went into this, particularly from the community foundation sector. So we were able to do the work that was necessary to ensure that nonprofits were included so that we could help the helpers, many of whom are operating even now trying to protect quality of life in our community.
All right. Todd Butler, what are you hearing most often?
So, Evan, we've been meeting ever since the kind of the crisis really ramped up in our community here. We started meeting with nonprofit organizations specific to this. We received some funding from the ESL Charitable Foundation to do these free consults for nonprofits. And 48 hours after making that available, we had 42 of them already scheduled. We've got 75 of them scheduled now and more coming. So there's a lot of hunger for information from the nonprofit sector, not just about the Payroll Protection Act or Payroll Protection Program, but also just how to react to these things. As you can imagine, nonprofit organizations, the spring is key fundraising time for them. So there's major events, including the Causeway Community Partners fundraising event. So all these organizations are canceling, rescheduling, postponing their events and taking a major financial hit as a result. Also, some of them unable to continue to operate programs that generate revenue. Many organizations have had to lay off staff or furlough their staff. So we're hearing a lot of financial distress from the nonprofit sector. We're helping them think through how to communicate with their donors, how to communicate with their funders. And this new influx of dollars to help support continued employment in the sector will not only help families continue to pay their bills, but also help the people that these organizations serve continue to get the support that they need. So we're talking every day with multiple organizations about how to react to this situation. And this new program is a source of great interest, obviously.
Okay. Martin Birmingham, CEO of Five Star Bank. What's your role, your organization's role here, Martin?
So, you know, and one of the things that I think is very important, and Sim was talking about this, is that we are living through something that is unprecedented in our lifetimes, and something that, you know, if you reflect on history, maybe not since World War II, we're dealing with a healthcare crisis that, healthcare industry, the science, and the government is trying to get their arms around, which is, you know, causing tremendous uncertainty in general in the world, but as part of that process, we are in effect shutting down our economy. So, the government, I think, has done a fantastic job of trying to coordinate its resources to make sure that ultimately it's going to get those resources to Main Street where it's needed. This is not like past recessions, the Great Recession, et cetera, where it was the financial sector, the Great Recession 12 years ago, or other parts of our economy. This is the entire economy, and it's, you know, right in the heart of Main Street. So our role as a local community bank and the banks in general are ultimately serving as a distribution network for these programs to be executed through the specifically the SBA lending program. But if you think about it, you know, the Federal Reserve has been doing a lot to support overall liquidity and assure that our financial markets are functioning appropriately and effectively. The Congress obviously has been passed legislation a week ago, which is driving the program we're talking about today. And that legislation has authorized the executive branch to put these programs in place and to ultimately get the relief that is so severely needed out into the hands of those who have been negatively impacted. So that's a long way of saying that as a community bank, as a commercial bank, as a SBA preferred lender, we serve as the conduit to get this much needed liquidity and support into the hands of small businesses.
Okay. Emily Cohen, as an attorney with Harder Seacrest Emery, I think we're going to get, I've already got a small pile of questions. I'm sure we're going to get some phone calls here. What are you trying to make sure that you're positioned to do here? I mean, is this simply about making sure everyone who would be available for help through this bill knows how to get it?
Yes, I think at the basic level, that's our first goal, is we want to make sure that people can get the information that they need to know in order to apply and not just apply for the loan, but apply some of the interesting parts of the loan, which is in main spec is the forgiveness piece. This, as some of the other people have already mentioned, this is an incredibly fluid process. It's changing on almost a daily basis. And so what we're really trying to focus on is taking in all of the information that's coming in from the Treasury, from the SBA, from just what we're able to read, and then digest it and turn it back around and help our clients.
All right, listeners, 844-295-TALK. If you've got questions about who's eligible and how to get help through this federal bill, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Email the program connections at WXXI.org. And I'm going to spend most of these 2 hours just working through your questions and trying to be as clear as we can. And Emily, let me start with a comment that a couple of listeners earlier this week referred me to. And so this comment, by the way, is a couple of days old on social media, but a lot of people are sort of talking about this or concerned about this. Stephanie Kelton is a professor of economics and public policy at Stony Brook, and she wrote this, quote, "I don't know who needs to hear this, but the $350 billion that is being allocated on a first-come, first-served basis is being quickly taken up by business owners with savvy financial advisors, accountants, and attorneys who are urging them to apply and walking them through the process," end quote. Is that accurate? I mean, a lot of people were sharing that going, well, when that $350 billion's gone, it's gone. We better know how to get this quickly. What's going on with that, Emily?
Yeah, we don't know yet kind of whether or not it's, how quickly the $350 billion is going to go and how it's going to be allocated. You know, what we do know is what the Fed, the Treasury put out last night, which is exactly what you said. It's a first-come, first-served basis. The applications went live today for some banks and some institutions. Other banks and other institutions are still trying, understandably so, to parse through the regulation and figure out what it is and what it is they should be asking for specifically in their application. I think the SBA has done a nice job of putting up a sample application on their website. You can pull it down from there and get a sense of what it is they're looking for. There are some intricacies for sure in the legislation. And if you are one of those businesses that is in the gray area of, am I applicable? How do I calculate my payroll costs? Do these costs count? Do these not? I think you do need to reach out to, you know, an accountant or your banker or your lawyer in those instances. But there is a lot in the bill that is pretty straightforward. And it's just about kind of working with your existing lender or working with a banking or lender relationship to figure out how you can move quickly to try to access some of these funds.
Okay. Simeon Bannister, by the way, I'm fully aware that we're in a situation where the answer to some of these questions may be we don't know yet. But are you concerned that the relief that's going to be available will be on that sort of first come, first serve, or do you think it's going to be equitable, not based on who has the advantages of having the right accountants or attorneys or guidance, but that it will be there for the people who are eligible, Simeon?
Well, I absolutely want to give a nod to Five Star, to Harder Seacrest, to Causeways in this regard, because they responded so quickly when we reached out and said we wanted to pull this briefing together, because we knew that in many of our nonprofit organizations, particularly our smaller nonprofit organizations, would be at a disadvantage when we heard that this was likely going to be a first-come, first-served program. And so to give our community a fighting chance to make sure that we get these resources so that we're positioned for a stronger recovery, we knew we needed to get this briefing done, and we needed to get it done quickly. And hence why it's going out today, the same day that the program is opening. We also, even though we're still parsing through the guidance, thought it was important to get out what we know today and then circle back as we learn more next week to continue to provide additional information and guidance on Tuesday afternoon. So absolutely. I also want to give a nod to Congressmember Morelli and his colleagues in the House and the Senate who realized the importance of the nonprofit sector in this space, and at least allocated the resources, and now it's incumbent upon us to make sure that our community takes advantage of them.
844-295-TALK, listeners, if you want to jump in, connections@wxxi.org. Go ahead.
I just would emphasize a couple of points that just were made. Number one, you think about the massive legislation that was approved in terms of its impact and size and scale. That was a week ago, less than a week ago, if you count when the president signed it at 4 p.m. on Friday. And so in that period of time, the Treasury and the Small Business Administration and the banking industry has been working like heck to make sure that we could prepare for rolling this out and delivering it. So to Simeon's point, the updates we've been receiving have been real time and are still coming. So I just, I think the industry and the government and the partners that we have are working very hard and in such good faith to make sure we can execute on the intention of these programs. To the $350 billion is my understanding a start. One of the things the Treasury Secretary has made clear in his comments in the White House briefings that he's participated in, and as well as other public statements, if there's a need for more, they being the executive branch, will go back to the Congress and ask for more authorization. So then I would suggest that, as was already commented, a great place to start is your banker or your lawyer or your accountant to get the paperwork organized to pursue this opportunity.
All right. I see our phones ringing. We're going to get to your phones in a second. But while producer Megan Mack fields your calls that are starting to flood, let's hit a couple of emails real quick here. Steve emails the program to say, are there any benefits for single-owned and operated businesses? Emily, Martin, you want to take that? I think Emily, maybe?
Yeah, absolutely. The PPP program, which is the Paycheck Protection Program loans, which are the loans under the CARES Act, are eligible for sole proprietors as well as independent contractors. They made the intentional decision to expand the existing SBA loan program to include individuals who would be sole proprietors or independent contractors. So it is a wider process now, and you can base your payroll costs off of 1099s and your payroll costs for the past year using that for sole proprietors or independent contractors.
Okay. The amazing John Dady from Dady Brothers Music sends us the following and says, I understand the CARES Act has been extended to include gig and self-employed workers, but the application process may not be available yet in New York State. Can you tell me if it is available and what is the process? I am a full-time musician out of work due to this pandemic. That's from John Dady, and I guess, Emily, I'll kick that to you as well.
Yep, same kind of premise there. It is available. You can go in, and the application itself is going to be the same, or at least is going to be substantially similar, I think. And Martin can weigh in on from the bank's perspective if they've thought about how it'll be different for those people. But the application on the SBA website now already contemplates independent contractors or kind of individuals self-employed. So you should go onto the website and pull it now and get a sense of kind of what it will look like, even though the applications for some of those subsets of individuals is not going to be available for intake until after the businesses first for kind of whatever reason. That's how the Treasury has set it up. So you are available. Your application is kind of there, so you can get a sense of what it will look like. But the process itself isn't going to be open for applications on that just yet.
Go ahead, Martin.
Agree. I totally agree. That's well said. Nothing more to add.
Okay. On we go. Danielle in Rochester on the phone. Go ahead, Danielle.
Hi. I am a small business owner locally, and I am working through applying for the Paycheck Protection Program this morning. And one thing that I'm trying to kind of verify and clarify is what the requirements are in terms of hiring back employees who may have been put on furlough, and as I understand it, when these funds are awarded, there's 8 weeks to use the funds. But I'm not sure what the requirement is in terms of like how quickly all employees need to be hired back and everything kind of surrounding that. So I'm just trying to figure out that so I make sure I hit those requirements.
All right, Danielle, hang there, and let's start with Emily on that.
Yep, sure. Absolutely. So, Danielle, you're exactly right. There is a requirement under the CARES Act to hire back employees that have been terminated, as well as if you have made any salary cuts in excess of 25%, to restore the employees to their original salaries before you received before you made those cuts. And so what you have to do is, let's say you applied for the loan, you got your loan, you then start your 8-week period on the day your loans are dispersed. During that 8-week period, before the end of the 8-week period, you have to hire back those employees, put them back on payroll, and maintain their salaries at their prior levels. That's what makes you eligible for the full forgiveness. It's not a hard, if you don't do that, you don't get any forgiveness. It's a rolling kind of decrease cap. If you only hire back a certain percentage, you keep some of the salaries below 25%, you decrease the amount that you're eligible to be forgiven for.
Danielle, any follow-up there? Why don't we get Martin? Go ahead, Martin.
No, I just would say, again, that's part of the detail that we are trying to work out with the SBA, the industry is, in terms of confirming that definition and how we work through that process of confirming, you know, what would be forgivable and not. In our capacity as a lender and in the borrower's capacity is really sponsoring these loans.
Okay. Danielle, any follow-up?
Yeah, no, I appreciate your help on that. And, you know, and I'm trying to determine in my sense, like a full-time employee versus part-time employee and what that means. And, you know, is there enough hours for everybody during that time and based on the kind of business that it is. So it sounds like some of those things are still to be determined, but it is a hiring back of all staff by the end of those 8 weeks. Is that correct?
Yes, like Martin said, it is kind of still to be determined, but it's a hiring back of just the full time employees during that time. Right now, we expect there to be additional guidance as it may relate to hiring back your part time employees, but the forgiveness right now relates to the full time employees.
Great, that's super helpful. Thank you so much. I appreciate your taking my question.
All right, Danielle, good luck. Thanks very much. 844 listeners, 844-295 talk. You've got questions about the Coronavirus Federal Relief Act. I mean, it's known as CARES, but really it's $2.2 trillion aimed at keeping everything afloat here in the economy, from workers, direct cash assistance, small businesses. So if you've got questions on loan support, et cetera, organizations, nonprofits, 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Email the program, connections@WXXI.org. Bruce in Rochester, call us back. We lost you. Let me get Patrick in Seneca Falls. Go ahead, Patrick.
Hi. I have a question about the payroll loan program.
Okay, go ahead.
Want me to tell you what the question is?
Yes, please. Go. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so sorry.
No problem at all.
I am a business owner of two businesses. One I own 100%, and the other I own 50%. And there seems to be a prohibition about applying twice. Is there a prohibition on applying for two separate businesses in which you are an owner and both businesses hire employees? So... and that would be what the money is for.
Sarah Martin, you want to jump in?
So that's probably one for Emily, but again, that's another very good question that we want to make sure that we get the guidance correct on. It deals with affiliation, and I think that ultimately deals down with the issue of control. So there's some technical hurdles probably to navigate this question to get it right, but the intention clearly is to support, those that are employed. But Emily?
Yeah, by the way, thank you for that. By the way, I said Sarah because I'm looking through my emails. I'm looking at a lit up board and a lot of emails, and I'm looking at an email from Sarah, who I will get to in a second here. But go ahead, Emily. Want to jump in there too? Go ahead.
Yep, no problem. I think there's two points to this question. The first is what Martin just mentioned, which is if there's a position where you own your business 50%, you should be thinking about how that other 50%, who owns it, because you may trigger something called affiliation, which would require you to look at the number of employees beyond just your own entity. But putting that aside for now, because that's a little bit more of an attenuated kind of case-by-case analysis, your question about do I apply for one application covering both businesses, or do I apply for two, is one that we're seeing a lot. And the advice that we've been giving so far is think about your payroll, this program and the way the funds are allocated and the way you're able to figure out what your loan amount is going to be under the PPP is based on your payroll costs. So if those businesses run individual payroll, you want to be able to be in a position to provide the payroll costs separately for those businesses and actually be able to submit separate applications because you're going to have two separate sets of payroll. And then when you're looking at your forgiveness, it's going to be based on those employees.
Yeah, and honestly, I was really the way I want to go about it is filing two separate applications, one for each business. Each one is a separate entity with a different EIN, has their own employees that don't cross over one to the other business. So that's the way I'm looking at it, fill out an application for not one but two separate businesses.
Yep, I would say check with your local banker, check with your who you use as your bank or lending institution, because they may be able mm-hmm. to say their policies are a little different, but you want to at least be able to set up your application, and when you're going through the application, thinking about it as two separate payroll costs and then calculating that for figuring out your loan amount. That's exactly the right response.
Wonderful. Thanks so much.
Patrick, thanks for the phone call from Seneca Falls. Let me reset the hour of what we're doing right now. In fact, it's really both hours. If you're on the phone waiting, we will get your call with our panel, essentially a panel of experts breaking down what's going on with this federal relief act for the coronavirus crisis. And that's because the Rochester Area Community Foundation has put this together. So let me tell you what's happening this hour, and it really extends to next hour. Next hour, we welcome Congressman Joe Morelli, and if you don't get your questions in this hour, he's here next hour to try to address your questions for who gets relief, how to get it, why it was done that way, what happens next. This hour, the Rochester Area Community Foundation has put together a webinar that's going to be available. It's available now. It's going to be available over the weekend. It's essentially on demand. And Simeon Bannister is the Vice President of Community Programs at RACF. Just remind people, Simeon, where they can go, because I know they've got questions this hour and next hour, but all weekend long, this webinar will help people understand who's eligible and how to get the help they need, whether they're an organization, nonprofit, small business owner. Where can they find it, Simeon?
Yep, they just visit racf.org/caresbriefing. Earlier, I indicated there was a hyphen. You can use the hyphen. You cannot use the hyphen. It's actually both, but it's racf.org/caresbriefing. And you can find the webinar. It'll be going up this afternoon. And this is the role that we're here to play as a community foundation, to share information, to make sure that our community is knowledgeable and aware of the resources and to distribute resources ourselves.
Absolutely timely and vital. And the feedback, we're getting a ton of phone calls and emails, and I think it's just indicative of the help that people need in understanding this. So let's take that break. You just heard Simeon Bannister from the Rochester Area Community Foundation. Todd Butler from Causewave Community Partners is here. Martin Birmingham from Five Star Bank. Emily Cohn is an attorney with Harder Seacrest and Emery. More of your phone calls and questions answered, as many as we can, right after our only break. Coming up in our second hour, Congressman Joe Morelli joins us on Connections. We're talking about everyone who might benefit from the CARES Act. And the congressman gets specific, answering any questions you have. We've already heard from renters, property owners, a lot of small business owners who want to know if they're eligible for relief. People are wondering when checks might show up, if there could be more checks in the future. Joe Morelli answers your questions next hour. This is Connections, and let's keep rolling through your phone calls. Jackie in Spencerport next. Go ahead, Jackie.
Hi, how are you today?
Good.
My question is, I'm a hairdresser, and we rent a salon, and we put in, because we're closed, we put in for the, to help recover our own financial, where we cut hair, in our own seats. And so we are ourselves renters in our own place, basically. And so we have a business. I have a business partner. And we put in for the PPA loan. And we did put 50% because they did ask us, what ownership we have with that. And so we put my information and hers. And then they got our bank information. Is that as far as we have to go? And they did ask, what is it? It's for rent and utilities is what we really need it for. And how does the loan work? Do they just deposit it and the forgiveness is just deposited? Or do you, what it, do you, you know, we save our receipts anyway for the tax man. It, does this be forgiven during tax time next year, or because we already filed for last year? So how does this forgiveness part go on?
All right,
and
Emily. Can we,
well, they just deposit it?
Yeah, go ahead, Emily.
Yeah, I want to take a step back. I want to make sure I understand which loan you applied for. Did you go through the SBA.gov website?
Yes, through the government.
Okay, so it's like, yeah, through the government. Yeah, so then it like it sounds like you applied actually not for the Paycheck Protection Program loan, which is the PPP, but for the Economic Injury Disaster Loan. Those loans are being run directly through the SBA website. They're a little bit different from the Paycheck Protection Program. The main difference there is that EIDL loans are not on their own subject to forgiveness. So the cap on those loans is $2 million. They're meant as more of a kind of general basket of loans available directly through the SBA for businesses exactly like yours that are that have to have the money in order to do things like rent and other payments or accounts payable that are outstanding. So I just want to make sure that you understand you've at this point applied for the EIDL, which is the Economic Injury Disaster Loan, and that on its own will not be you won't be able to get the forgiveness for that loan. If you're interested in applying for the PPP loan, you're not barred from doing so because you've already applied for the EIDL loan. You can still contact your bank or contact your local lender and see if you can get an application and get in their process for the PPP loans. And under the new regulations we got last night, there is the ability to take any loan that you've already gotten in the EIDL and roll any purpose of that for payroll, that you're using it for payroll costs, roll it into your PPP, and that would make that portion for payroll subject to forgiveness. The EIDL, one of your questions was, you know, how do I get the money? How does that work? One thing that we just don't know yet is exactly how, you know, the money is going to be dispersed. What I expect is you filled out the application online, and the SBA did a really nice job, actually, of taking what was a long, kind of cumbersome application, shortening it, making it easier to digest and easier to get through. It's, I think, 6 or 7 click-throughs now. What I imagine we've heard from the SBA is that they're now in the process of intaking all of those loans, and it could be a couple of weeks before they're able to process them, turn around, and disperse the funds. But what they did in the interim to cover that is created a basket of money, this $10,000 advance that you might have seen when you filled out the application. And if you didn't, I would recommend that you go and you ask the SBA about that. Okay, yeah, perfect, because you can request up to $10,000 within 3 days of your application. So I would say follow up with the SBA. I know they're accepting emails. I know their call wait list. I talked to a client who said they waited on hold for like 3.5 hours with the SBA. As I'm sure you can imagine, they're inundated. But shoot them an email or give them a call and say, I submitted my application. You know, I'm expecting to get, I requested that $10,000 advance, and I want to note that $10,000 advance in the EIDL loan is non-refundable. So it's even if you don't get the loan at the end, you don't have to worry about paying back that $10,000 and see kind of where you are in their queue.
Okay, the other question is, what is the phone number for that SBA? Do you know it?
Sorry, say that one more time.
You said to give them a call. Do you know the number for the SBA website?
I don't. I would say go to the SBA.gov website. And if you click through, when you go to the SBA.gov homepage at the top, they have a coronavirus relief options yellow banner. If you click there, it takes you to all of their kind of open information that they've put out. And if you were to kind of click in there, you might be able to find the email address for email and phone number for the SBA to where to call.
All right, Jackie, good luck. Mark in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Mark.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I am a sole proprietor. I am an electrician. I have a small business. I have two employees who I am doing my best to keep on payroll out of pocket because I've had to lay them off because you know, not only don't we have work, but we're non-essential unless we're doing emergency repairs. My question is I'm reading, getting conflicting things no matter where I look, and I'm understanding that my wages as well, my income is covered under the Paycheck Protection Act. And I don't actually receive a weekly paycheck, per se, and I'm wondering, do I compute my income by going to my 2019 tax return and going to my taxable Social Security wages?
Emily Cohen?
Yeah, I think this is an interesting, this is kind of an open point. We're not entirely sure in the instance where it's you're not covered by your payroll, how you go about calculating your employment costs, your payroll costs. My first recommendation here would certainly be to speak to your accountant or speak to an accountant about how they would recommend you go and figure out what your payroll costs were for 2019 to calculate what your loan amount is. But I think that is, I think that's still kind of a gray area in the line. I think that there are ways for you to calculate it. It's just one of those kind of special examples that has some intricacies to it.
Yeah, because my employees are actually on a payroll through a payroll service. It's just that I myself basically just take cash out whenever I want to, and then what my income is actually determined by my tax man, actually, when he did my 2019 taxes. And I would just assume if I'm paying Social Security on a certain amount of money that the government considers that money to be my income from my business, since that is my sole means of support.
Yeah, and what
I think your thought process is valid there.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, Emily, I just was going to say, I think the logic and the thought process is solid, working with your accountant, and ultimately, you know, in addition to the payroll information, in this case, show your bank the tax return, either your personal or where this business is reflected, corporate tax return. And as Emily said, I think this is where we are looking for continued confirmation and guidance, but there's got to be a logical way to figure it out and compute it. I'm sorry, Emily.
No, I was just going to say exactly that. I think exactly how you're referencing, you know, you're looking at your tax returns. Those are the kinds of documents that your bank is going to want to see in support of your application. So, you know, speak with your accountants, rely on your previous tax returns that shows your payroll costs. And I'm sure you can figure out a way to qualify those for an application.
Thank you so much for your input. You've certainly answered a lot of questions that I can't find answers to anywhere online.
Mark, thank you. Good luck to you. Look, we're all trying to deal with that, and that's why the Rochester Area Community Foundation has put together what they have with it's called a CARES briefing. If you go this afternoon to the website, racf.org/CARES briefing, you'll have a webinar that you can check out and sort of kind of digest the information. It's going to cover a lot of ground, and if you still have questions next week, you can follow up with them starting on Tuesday. But right now, what they're trying to do is help everybody who's got these kind of questions. We're doing 2 hours on this today, the second hour with Congressman Joe Morelli, and we know that a lot of the questions that are coming in are sort of different flavors of the same idea, but that's important. That's why Emily Cohen from Harder Seacrest Emery is here, Martin Birmingham from Five Star Bank, Todd Butler from Causewave, Simeon Bannister from the Community Foundation. John.
Hey, Evan.
Yeah, please, go ahead.
Just to offer a quick summary of what is still available through the SBA in addition
sure.
to the program we're talking about.
Yep.
You know, Emily gave a really good summary of the EIDL loan opportunity and the fact that if you have applied for EIDL, you also can apply for the payroll protection program so long as the proceeds are used for different purposes. But ongoing SBA programs, their traditional 7A and 504 program is functioning normally. They've actually increased the opportunity to borrow up to $1 million from its normal $500,000 level. And the CARES Act allows any borrower who has, you know, regular servicing status with the SBA, which is a technical, you know, concept between the bank and the SBA, they can get 6 months of payment of those loans, those outstanding loans, paid for by the SBA. Again, the mechanics of that process are still being worked out, but that is an intention of the Relief Act activities. As well, the first 6 months of new 7A loans that are originated between now and September will be eligible for 6 months of principal and interest to be paid by the Small Business Administration. So I just thought I'd also make sure we got that out on the table as well in terms of what's available to small businesses.
All right. Very good.
Evan, this is Todd trying to chime in, if
sure.
you don't mind, for a quick second. I know you want to get to those callers.
No, it's okay.
I wanted to make a plug for the nonprofit sector here, if I could. We've been talking about small for-profit businesses, which are in dire straits as well and desperately need this support. But the nonprofit sector in our community is a huge employer, $1 billion in annual revenue. And some of the aspects of this are have some additional wrinkles that nonprofit organizations need to be thinking about as well. So nonprofit organizations are essentially owned by the community and governed by boards of directors. So anybody from a nonprofit organization that is considering this really needs to make sure that they keep their board in the loop on that. It is incurring a debt, even though it's likely to be forgiven. It is still incurring a debt, so the board needs to be apprised of that. And starting by talking with your bank that you do your normal banking with is something that all nonprofit organizations who are considering this ought to be doing today, if at all possible. It does only apply to 501c3 nonprofit organizations, as well as some veterans groups. Other types of nonprofits, like 501c4s, which are not charities but volunteer fire companies and homeowners associations, those sorts of organizations, they are not eligible for this, but are eligible for some of the other aspects, like the EIDL program that was talked about there. And nonprofits have to be independent nonprofits, and there are a few different ways, and there's some levels of complexity associated with what makes you an independent nonprofit, and you know, multiple boards that are, you know, may contribute to an employee count that could put an organization over that 500 employee maximum. So I just wanted to get that plug in there, and also echo the quote that you mentioned about the importance of an equity lens to this. I think it's going to be really important as this program goes forward that that we track who is accessing these loans in the nonprofit and for-profit sectors and make sure that this doesn't become just something that benefits only one type of organization or one segment of the community. And that's why we are taking all comers from the nonprofit sector and doing these free meetings with them to help them think this stuff through. And we're working as hard as we can to make sure that even the tiniest of nonprofit organizations that often play really important roles in the community are getting the word about this as well.
Absolutely.
Hey, Evan. Yeah. I hope folks really realize just what a resource CauseWave Community Partners is in this community. And I suspect that you have a lot of listeners that are at home and they're with their kids, and maybe on a normal day you'd be out at the museum, or perhaps you'd be at a concert or going to check out a show at Jiva tonight, or any of the other myriad of activities that our nonprofit sector supports in Rochester. And if you value those activities, if you believe that that's important, not only is there in this bill provisions around support from the bill for nonprofits, but also there's some changes to tax law with respect to charitable deductions that allows folks to offer support to the sector as well. And we certainly want to encourage people to consider that.
All right. Back to the questions from listeners. John in Brighton is self-employed with no employees. He's a landscape gardener, getting maybe a little bit of work right now, but less. And concerned about that, wondering what he can do. Are there provisions for people like him in that position? Emily Cohen?
Yes, this is similar to, it's the same kind of situation even with employees or without. This is, again, one of those more complicated situations when you're thinking about calculating what your payroll amount is going to have been. If you are a self-employed or an eligible self-employed individual, there is some relief available under the bill, but you should circle up with your accountant and make sure you're figuring out how you're calculating that, you know, relying on your tax returns from the prior year.
Relief available for people like John if what?
It's still the gray area in terms of how they're calculating what your payroll is going to be, so how they're calculating what your payroll amount is going to have been. But the idea of an eligible self-employed individual is built into the CARES Act.
Okay. Sarah writes and says, asking about clarification about the Paycheck Protection Program, how it works if you own your own business and have no employees. I know we have to wait until next Friday as a sole proprietor to apply for that portion, but is it better to apply for this, or is it better to apply for the EIDL loan? That's from Sarah. Martin, Emily, want to hit that?
Go
ahead, Emily.
Okay, I was going to say, I think one misconception I want to make clear now is whether you can apply only for the EIDL or the Paycheck Protection Loan. Generally, businesses are, if you're under the 500 threshold and you're otherwise eligible underneath
either, which is, you know, a list of things that you have to figure out for eligibility. But if you are eligible, you are able to apply for both an EIDL loan and a PPP loan. So don't feel like you have to wait until you apply for your PPP loan in order to first apply and then later apply for an EIDL. You can apply for both. If you go onto the SBA website and you go through the list on that EIDL application, it'll tell you pretty quickly on the first page whether or not your business falls within one of the realms that's applicable there. And then you can wait until next week, which is, you know, the planned kind of launch date for that subset of businesses to be able to apply for PPP.
Okay. Steve in Canandaigua next on the phone. Go ahead, Steve.
Yes. Hi, Evan. Thanks. Thanks for all this information. It's great. I've listened to your show for many years and we'll continue on. But at any rate,
thanks.
My question is, my wife and I own actually two separate small businesses. They're considered to be essential. Basically, we provide in-home senior care to older folks that otherwise would need to go to assisted living of some form. Naturally, a lot of them are concerned and have cut back on services. My question is, I'm hearing everything referring to full-time employees. We have approximately 20 part-time employees. All of our employees are part-time due to the nature of the shifting needs of the business. And I'm not hearing anything referenced to as far as part-time being eligible for any of this. Also, because I just heard another question similar, I am on the payroll of one of the companies. My wife is not. They're both LLCs, but that's another subject. So any insight onto the part-time qualifiers, if any? Thank you.
Okay, Steve, thanks. Go ahead, Emily.
Yep, absolutely. So there is some distinction between full-time employees and part-time employees, but when you're thinking about calculating whether or not you're eligible and you only have part-time employees, yes, the answer is yes. The way that the payroll costs are calculated underneath the Act, it includes full-time employee salaries and part-time employee salaries, and the eligibility for employees also includes kind of people who are paid under an other basis. So the full-time employee distinction, it doesn't mean that you're not eligible because you're not paying full-time employees. When you're talking about your wife and your situation in particular, this kind of ties back to what we've said before. If you are on the payroll, it's easy to figure out what your cost is going to be and what your payroll cost will be for figuring out your loan amount. In the instance where your wife isn't on the payroll, you know, circle up with your accountants and figure out how you can tie those costs into your payroll costs as well.
Okay. Does that help, Steve?
Yes. Thank you so much. It's perfect. I really appreciate it.
Wonderful. Thank you, Steve. Different Steve. Steve Martin at Canandaigua National Bank on the line. Hi, Steve in Canandaigua.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for having me on your show. And Canandaigua National, like other local banks, we have a direct SBA. We're an SBA approved fund.
Oh, man. We're losing you, Steve. I don't know if you're calling from a bunker here. We're all at home, but Steve, call us in our second hour. We got Joe Morelli, and we'll make sure that you can get that message out to the community with the help you're trying to do. We appreciate that. Let me squeeze one more in. Got to keep it tight, but again, we're going to do this again next hour with Congressman Morelli. Kevin in Rochester. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hi. Yeah, real quick. I just have a general unemployment question. My wife was, and right when this all started, was put in for 2 weeks' notice on her other job. I was going to get another job. In the midst of all that, she lost her old job after she put her time in or for 2 weeks' notice in. And then the new job, basically, she's working about half the hours. Does any of the employment benefits cover making up any of that she's now not getting due to the bad timing?
Okay. Emily, you want to take that?
I can't speak to this question. I don't know the answer for you. I really have been focusing mostly on the CARES Act and the availability of things underneath that, which is really applicable to employers. I would say she should reach out to someone to get some help with the unemployment specific question. Sorry.
Okay. Sorry about that.
No.
Thank you anyhow.
No, we appreciate it, Kevin, and good luck to you. So as we get ready to wrap this hour, Simeon Bannister, some final thoughts from you. I want to let our listeners know, if you've emailed the program and you've got questions, if you've called and you've got questions and we didn't get them this hour, Congressman Morelli joins us in the second hour, similar subject, and we're going to try to get as many questions as we can. But if people have more questions, Simeon, as the days go on, what do you want them to do?
Yep, you can email us, particularly nonprofit organizations, at grants@recf.org. We're compiling all those questions, and we're going to use those as the basis for the Q&A that we'll do on Tuesday. And then we'll also try to make sure that we get answers to as many as possible. We'll also link to some other small business resources on our website. Small business is a critical component of this community, something that the Community Foundation itself has supported through our work in entrepreneurship, amongst other areas. And I just want to end with a note of gratitude, both for this community, for Heart of Seacrest and Emory, for Five Star Bank, for Causeway Community Partners, and finally for WXXI for helping to amplify this message, and the team over there. Thank you guys for the work that you're doing. Again, these goggles are being offered on a first-come, first-served basis. We want to position our community to have the strongest recovery possible. That's our mission at the Community Foundation, is to strengthen our region. And so this is part of fulfilling that goal.
Thank All right. Listeners, again, especially in the nonprofit world, but really anybody with questions, get online, and we will link on our various platforms, racf.org/caresbriefing. It's up this afternoon. The webinar will be helpful. Get in touch with them. And again, if you're in that nonprofit world especially and you're worried about what this means, if you're a small organization, a lot of questions, and there's a lot of great answers out there, especially if we can move as quickly as we can. Simeon Bannister, thanks for the time and the expertise. Great work on this.
Thank you, guys.
Todd Butler from CauseWave Community Partners. Thank you, Todd. Always good to have you.
Thank you, Evan.
Martin Birmingham, Five Star Bank. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Emily Cohen, outstanding help for our listeners from Harder, Seacrest, and Emory. Thank you, Emily.
Thank you, Evan. Thank you for having me.
Congressman Morelli joins us next.